Penguin Random House Audio presents Isola, a novel by Allegra Goodman. Read for you by Fiona Hardingham, with a note read by the author. Note to listeners. This audiobook contains a bonus PDF with a map and recommendations for further reading from the book.
In memory of Madeline Joyce Goodman.
Prologue. I still dream of birds. I watch them circle, dive into rough waves, and fly up to the sun. I call to them, they hear no answer. Alone, I stand on a stone island. I watch for ships and see three coming, tall ships close enough to hail. I load my musket and shoot into the air. I see pennants close enough to touch as I run barefoot to the shore. Rocks cut my feet and I leave a trail of blood. Brambles tear my sleeves and score my arms as I shout, "Wait! Stop! Save me!" The ship's commander hears my voice and gun. Dressed in black, he stands on deck to see me beg. As I plead for help, he smiles. When I shoot, 10,000 birds rise screaming. Their wings beat against the wind. All the sailors hear and see, but their commander orders them to sail on. I reach, but cannot stop the ships. I wade after them into the sea. In vain, I struggle as wet skirts drag me down. I cry out, but water fills my throat. I cannot fly. I cannot swim. I cannot escape my island. Part 1. Périgord, 1531 to 1539. The first point, above all others, is that earnestly and with all your faith and power, you guard against doing, saying, or thinking anything that will anger God. Never allow the subtle temptations of the world, the flesh, or the devil to seize you, so that you live more chastely and guard yourself from sin. Remember, as Augustine says, that you cannot be sure of a single hour. Your wretched body will die, decay, and be eaten by worms, leaving your poor soul alone to face the consequences. Anne of France, Lessons for My Daughter, Chapter 2, circa 1517. Chapter 1. I never knew my mother. She died the night that I was born, and so we passed each other in the dark. She left me her name, Marguerite, and her ruby ring, but no memory of her. I did not know my father either. When I was 3 years old, he was killed fighting for the king at Pavia. Then I was rich, although I did not know it, and poor, although I did not know it. I was heir to a chateau in Périgord, with its own villages, vineyards, and sunny fields, but I had no parents, aunts, or uncles living. Servants surrounded me, but I had no sisters or brothers, and so I was alone. My nurse, Damienne, was my first teacher. She was an old woman, at least 40, and her hair, once red, was faded like brick. Her eyes were shrewd but tired, and all around her mouth her skin was creased in little lines like unpressed linen. My nurse was stout, her stomach soft, her bosom pillowy. When we lay down to sleep, she held me close, as though I were her own, and if I was not her child, then certainly she belonged to me, for she had served my family since she was a girl. She said my father had been noble, not just in name, but on the battlefield. When his horse was killed under him, he fought on with sword and pike until an archer shot him in the neck. Wounded, my father fell, but his men broke off the arrow's shaft and bore him away. In his tent, even as a surgeon cut out the arrowhead, my father demanded to return to fight. "Take me back," he gasped, while his blood streamed out in rivulets. I imagined his blood, ruby red. As for my mother, she had been a beauty. My eyes were green, but her eyes had been greener. My hair was amber brown, but hers had been gold like winter wheat. My mother's hands were elegant, her fingers long. When she played the lute, her notes were perfect, but her modesty was such that she performed only for her own ladies. As a girl, my mother had been gentle and obedient, but my nurse would do her best with me. Damien fussed, but she was kind. When I tested her, she forgave me. Only on great occasions did she lose patience. The first time my guardian visited, Damien's sharp words startled me. After a messenger summoned me downstairs, my nurse scolded, "You aren't fit to be seen. Your slippers are disgraceful."
"How are they disgraceful?"
I asked as she helped me into silver sleeves. My nurse sat me down hard and I slumped, offended, but she did not relent.
"Sit straight. Do not let your back so much as touch your chair."
"Why not? What will happen if I touch my chair?"
"No questions."
"Why?"
"Oh, for God's sake."
My nurse could not read, but she had taught me how to pray. Our Father, our Mother, Holy Mary, full of grace. At first, I imagined my own parents as I atoned these words, but Damien stamped out this childish heresy. You did not pray to your own father and mother, but to the father and mother of the world, the king and queen who reigned in heaven. And so I understood that while I belonged to the Lord and to the Virgin, they did not belong to me. This was true of my inheritance as well, because I could not govern my own lands. I had a guardian, and he would manage my estate until my marriage. I was already betrothed, and would wed at 15 if I lived. If I didn't, I might go to heaven. My soul would float above the tallest towers. I would not know hunger or suffer from the cold, and I would hear the angels singing. This was what I learned. But when I wondered, why not die and fly to heaven now? Damien said, "For shame. It was wicked to ask, and what made me think a wicked child could go? One with needlework, so poor and lice crawling in her hair. Even now, when I must look a lady," Damien found nits.
"Terrible."
She pulled them off like tiny burrs. My mother hardly had lice in comparison, but she was herself an angel. I imagined her lice were little angels too. I was wicked, just as Damien said. My hems were ragged because I climbed rough tower stairs to see the view. Fearsome, ancient, pierced with arrow slits, our north and western towers were built upon a cliff to command and to defend the country. From there I could see my villages, orchards, vineyards, and the green river winding, spanned by a stone bridge. As for my slippers, I had ruined them at the stables where I ran to see the horses. Damien would hurry after me, although she wasn't fast, and stand calling to the grooms for help. Then, thoughtless as I was, I hid. I slipped behind the water troughs and stable doors, but in the end, I followed her inside.
"God's will,"
Damien murmured now, because I was her constant care. She combed through a drop of oil and bound my hair so tight that my eyes widened.
"Don't touch,"
Damien adorned me with a circlet of pearls and held up a glass. I laughed at the sight of myself, wide-eyed, silver stiff.
"Don't you understand?"
I didn't, but I tried to humour her. Putting on a solemn face, I stepped carefully to meet my guardian. My nurse helped me with my skirts as we took the stairs. Down echoing passageways and through a gallery, we walked to the great hall, long as a church's nave and high as heaven. This was my hall, as it had belonged to my mother's family. But I came here seldom because the place was grand, and I was small. I knew as little of the chateau's public rooms as I did of my farms and vineyards, for...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?